Well, this is the first Sunday after Christmas. And for Christians, it's kind of a null point in between the birth of Jesus and Epiphany, which is the story of the discovery of who Jesus was and what his birth may have meant, especially to the Roman Empire of the time, probably around the end of the second century. Now, how the Christian church year got defined is an interesting topic, but not particularly to Unitarian Universalists and other folks who are sick and tired of Christmas, which, of course, started sometime before Halloween. So I won't go there this morning. I mention it so that we can situate ourselves in time somewhere between Christmas and the end of 2014 and the beginning of 2015. One of the traditional tasks of the season, which to my mind can be just as boring as some of the Christian church trivia, is to look back at the old year, take stock, and then let it go. I mean, some of the stuff that happened I'd really rather not revisit, and letting it go, well, sometimes that's just impossible. What does that mean anyway, letting go? Forgetting? Stuffing it into some dark place in my mind where it can bite me later in nightmares and arguments or other psychological triggers. Suppose that letting go means embracing whatever happened and incorporating it into our sense of who we are. That seems to me to be the healthy way to move on into whatever happens next. So, we've seen a lot of death in this congregation in this past year. Good friends, leaders that inspired us to do more than we thought we could, lovers, wives, husbands, children. Some major illnesses have been discovered among our friends and families. And we've passed some milestones in our community life. Our Carl Gregg finally jumped through all the hoops, or nearly all, and we issued a call to him as our first settled minister in nearly a decade. Our membership is growing. We have a choir that's only a step or two below the Mormon Tabernacle. So many folks are attending now that the parking lot can't hold them all, and we had to go to two services. So we've had some good times, births, graduations, marriages. Ah, yes, marriages. Here's where some social justice comes in. Prohibitions against gay marriage fell in 2014 like the Berlin Wall. The Supreme Court is going to make a ruling on this in the coming year, and my bet is they won't dare do anything other than confirm what 35 states have already done. So, there's a lot to grieve and a lot to celebrate. But what about the wider community? Those of us who lived through the 1960s and 1970s, through the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, Watergate, we are wondering if we learned anything at all from that wrenching, challenging, terrible, transformative time. I can't think of a more horrible illustration of the myth of the slaughter of the innocents than the fact that just since the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, 14 more children have been killed by police, among them the 12-year-old Tamir Rice. And Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala survived the attempt to kill her for being an educated Pakistani girl who was calling for the education of all girls. And there are hundreds of others. The girls kidnapped by rebels in northern Nigeria, and the slaughter of 142 children in their school in Pakistan. I would suggest that at a very deep archetypal level, children like these could not be allowed to live because they are a threat to the empire. They are a threat to the way society sets itself up. So what about justice? I'm going to suggest that true justice is not about retribution and payback and getting even. Real justice, the kind of justice that wells up from the best of humanity, is distributive justice compassion. That means radical fairness. And radical fairness means the presumption of innocence when found at the scene of a crime, no matter what one's record may have been, or what race you happen to be, or what religion you happen to practice. Radical fairness means if I have more money than you, I pay more taxes, so that even though I don't have children, your children can go to good schools. This is not easy. Jesus and a lot of other people since he walked the earth have given their lives for the principle of distributive justice, compassion, because distributive justice is anathema to empire. It's the opposite to the way we've set everything up to work. Radical fairness means abandoning our self-interest so that others can have a chance. This principle of radical fairness, this radical abandonment of self-interest, this distributive justice, this love, applies to personal relationships, business relationships, political relationships, domestic government policies, international government policies, corporate business governance. It even applies to how we run ourselves in this community. And when the people live like that, what happens? Prophet Isaiah tells us that when the people embrace radical fairness and abandon their own self-interest, the other nations of the world change their minds about us. We get a new name. Many of you know that Mike Morse and I have made, in the past year, have made a sacred commitment to one another to build a future for ourselves that includes the continuing care and nurture of Carol, who is Mike's wife of 54 years. And who is now in the late stages of Alzheimer's. This commitment, indeed this arrangement, is unorthodox and unconventional. It challenges the usual paradigms of marriage and relationships. It honors the deepest integrity and needs of all three of us, allowing for inclusion rather than exclusion. And it embraces the profound realities of love within the context of the dire consequences of this terrible disease called Alzheimer's. It means that the rest of the journey of our respective lives will not be traveled alone. It means we have new names. We have new ways of thinking about ourselves and one another. I live from the personal conviction that what I do on a personal level shifts what the Germans call the Zeitgeist, the paradigm, the normalcy of social organization. So every time anyone does something that undermines that baked-in social unfairness that hangs over us all, we affect the wider web of existence of which we are all a part. What name could we get if we challenge the social paradigm in which we live by choosing nonviolence and inclusiveness? Would we then, as a people, stop torturing prisoners, stop supporting corrupt dictatorships, start creating a health care system that truly cared about our individual well-being? 3,000 years ago, the prophet Isaiah wrote these words. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners. They shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall rise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. And the nations shall see your vindication, and all the kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will give. So mote it be.